we're back. Welcome back to, what the hell is this called again? Deep Thinking. The motorcycle
road. You need to come up with a new start to our show.
What are you
it's the
talking
same
about?
Every time.
No, it's not.
Wait, you're going to say something about this Judea in front soon.
I have an entirely different place where the mental train runs, just goes screaming off the tracks.
And who is this I of which you speak?
Oh, I'm Michael Gugis. And
that
you
means
are,
I must be Ed
you
Sorbo.
You must be Ed Sorbo.
So this is show number 15.
Episode number 15.
Episode. Oh, we're having episodes
that's
now.
That's what I have it on my blog. It's episode. Yeah, right? Exactly.
Or my, you know what? I just thought of something funny. My show says
dear God, I hope it's funny.
The title, which you always write, which are funny. And then I use the number symbol,
right.
And then the number.
Right.
But I'm realizing that kids today are now reading my shows as whatever the title is, hashtag 15.
Right.
Right? What the hell is a hashtag?
Exactly. They're at, oh, did you see
it
this?
It says
hashtag,
number, punk.
Hashtag 15. I had a discussion yesterday in class with a student. We were talking about text messaging. And
you're supposed to lecture in class so those fuckers don't get you off track.
Oh, yeah, right. Get a bad chance of that, right? It's just a matter of keeping them engaged. Asynchronous communication, Mark's text messaging communication. People don't necessarily respond in real time to you.
Right.
Right? You and I say that. The little 18-year-old chica in my class said, excuse me, professor, that I'm going to have to disagree with you there. If I text message somebody and they don't text me right back, something has gone horribly wrong, and that's why we're all doomed, because those people are going to be running the world one day.
You know, I agree, except that the old folks have been saying that about the young folks since the beginning of time.
I know.
Right? Like,
I know.
Those guys can't knock a sharp edge off of a rock to save society. We're doomed, right? That's where it started.
Exactly.
That kid can't find
exactly.
a fucking berry.
Exactly. Right. That kid can rub two sticks together forever and he won't be able to make a fire.
He's trying to throw the spear farther by putting it in a stick that makes his arm longer. That's just crazy.
That's just crazy. It'll never work. And you know what'll happen, of course, is it will take a while to sort it all out, and eventually it'll just become
sooner or later the old people will find out what hashtag means.
But well, actually, not entirely true. What is really happening on that front, at least in the world of academia, teaching, when cell phones came out, I promise we'll get to motorcycles in a second here.
Why? Don't believe his promises. Yeah. He's a liar.
When smartphones became ubiquitous.
And the phone is smarter than you, that's
right. Bad. You know, God knows it's smarter than my students. Cutting edge professors tried to incorporate the cell phone into the in-class educational experience, right? Here's a quiz on the board. Take out your smartphones and answer these questions on this quiz.
And that's not the way I would be a professor. I'd be like, turn that phone off before you walk in my shop.
It didn't work.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's what we're realizing. About 30 seconds into that experiment, everybody's back on Facebook and Twittering and looking
at... Well, it's good that they did the experiment. I'm down with the science of that, and then now we've proven
We'd much rather, than listen to the professor, we'd much rather, as a species, look at pictures of naked women.
You know, I think
that's not bad.
I remember the other kids in school complaining about my father, who was a history teacher at this intermediate school I went to, 7th and 8th grade. And, you know, they'd, oh, Mr. Sorbo, he's so strict. You know what?
Yep.
When I come across those guys today, they remember the stuff he taught them.
Right? Exactly. The cool professors.
There's something
right?
to be with yeah, being exactly. the drill sergeant. There's a reason you can count on military people to get the task done. Right?
You know, and I had a student yesterday tell me, you know, I haven't had a professor before who said what you say, which is, if I see you using your phone or I hear it go off, you're going to fucking die. Okay? And he said, the trippy thing is, for 45 minutes, I'm not thinking about my phone. He says, it's kind of nice. I'd forgotten what that was like. But I digress.
All new technology is dual-edged.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, what's the definition to be a professor? It's not necessarily the person. It's the institution you're working at, right? What gets you the title.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not a professor if I'm not teaching. I mean, I could claim to be a professor, but I could also claim to be a doctor, right? But
that's only so you pick up chicks.
You
can have the same education, and if you're teaching preschool, you're not a professor.
No,
if you're teaching at an accredited college, then you can be a professor.
Yeah, professor is usually a term we use at college. But I digress. Professor was also the name of Formula One driver Alain Prost, who...
Well, and they call some motorcycle guy a doctor, exactly. But I'm not letting him look up my butt. No, no way.
No, he's not looking at my girlfriend, all right? What's
it gonna say? I got a question from Michael deGrasse Tyson or his representative.
You got a question from him?
No, for him.
Okay,
I'm sorry, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Neil
or
deGrasse Tyson.
One of our listeners. Mike who can
Tyson.
Answer this.
Mike Tyson.
So,
dude,
no, yeah, that's
beats
different.
The shit
no,
out
no,
of the
no.
universe.
So we all know that most of our timekeeping devices are a little bit inaccurate.
Correct.
Right. Remember back in the day, you dialed the time phone number.
Right.
At the tone,
beep.
The time will be. It'll be beep. Right. And you say. And of course, now you know you would go on the internet and you would check the British mean time or whatever
right.
it's called, right? Okay, so whatever device you got is a little bit wrong all the time, which means it's never 100% accurate.
Correct.
A clock that is stopped, dead battery, is 100% accurate twice.
Unless.
My question is,
go ahead.
How far off does a functioning timepiece have to be to be less accurate than the one that's perfectly accurate twice and then inaccurate the rest of the day? Follow what I'm saying? So
no
you're
clue.
A little bit wrong all the time.
No clue.
Versus you're perfectly right twice. Does it ever equal out? That's my question. If somebody knows the answer, let us know, please.
Is that drill press plugged in?
It's not.
I would really like to plug. I would like to drill a hole in my skull right now.
I want you to know that drill press serves two purposes. One is drilling holes fairly straightly.
Yes.
And the other is because it's got a little light there
right.
with a regular incandescent light bulb which generates heat.
Right.
When I find tired out bees on the cement cold floor,
aww.
I pick them up, I place them, I use that light to warm them, and I put a little drop of sugar water on the towel next to them, the paper shop towel,
right?
So they can have some energy, they get warmed up, and then they fly away all happy.
Right.
I have a bee debt I have to pay back because
yes.
I was responsible for a hive being destroyed in Hawaii.
Okay, so you're balancing the
I'm trying to. I don't think okay. I can ever pay this debt back because
that was a lot of bees.
Yeah.
But one at a time, you'd be surprised what you can accomplish.
You can try to do all you can do is the best you can, and I'll let them judge me for that.
So, Ed, I have a theory about motorcycle road racing.
Only one?
I have this. This is the one we're going to talk about today.
Okay.
And it was after watching Phillip Island, World Superbike. Grand
your
Phillip
theory
Island.
Is wrong. My beliefs outweigh your theory.
I disagree.
Okay.
And I will be able to prove to you that my theory is correct. And I will prove to you my theory is correct by not listening to your counter-argument.
But I'm going to use the fact that you're smart enough to only call it a theory. And I'm going to use that against you and claim that my beliefs. But mine was written down in a book that's older than yours.
That doesn't matter.
I know.
You know, hey, there's books out
what's
there.
What's your theory?
There are books out there that talk about the Soviet Union, you know, in the present tense. Guess what? You know? Here's my theory. Why races at places like Phillip Island, places like Thruxton in Great Britain, Willow Springs, the big track, why do those produce such fantastic races?
The little track is called Streets of Willow, by the way.
Right.
When you say Willow Springs, that's
right,
the
that's
big
why
track.
I just said the big track. Or they call it WSIR. Places like that, places with big, long, sweeping turns. It's been a while since the AMA ran a national out at Willow Springs, but those races were fantastic. Those races were decided by two guys going into turn eight, you know, side by side.
On the last lap.
On the last lap,
yep.
Absolutely. They were spectacular.
So the question is, why do fast tracks with long sweeping corners
right.
make for better racing?
Want to know my theory?
Yes.
Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Especially with spec tires, because the...
Well, you can leave the spec tires out. We've already proven that the races are spectacular in MotoGP, in World Superbike, in AMA... Super, it didn't have spec tires, so
well,
that's...
But especially...
I mean, spec tires are going to make anything closer, so that's irrelevant.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Geez, let me get the sentence out for...
If you would just talk,
I can't believe
we
haven't turned this drill press
it's
on
only,
yet.
It's only been 9 minutes. Keep going.
What is the limiting factor in a high-speed sweeper of the speed of your motorcycle?
It's your theory.
What is it? What do you think?
Well,
a high-speed
grip,
sweeper.
Grip and the size of your cojones.
Absolutely,
yes.
Right? Now, let's assume that most professional motorcycle road racers generally are equal in
or the
cojones
size. Or the
size
of your ovaries,
yes.
Whichever
they,
you prefer.
They are generally, when it comes to raw courage, they're all pretty brave.
Yeah.
Okay.
The difference gets really small.
Colin Edwards, that poster you've got over there on the wall in the shop.
Yes.
That bike is that the Aprilia?
That's
it is
the Aprilia.
Aprilia.
Yeah.
Okay. He never won a race. That thing tried to kill him. The second time he got on that, he was braver than I was.
You call that courage, getting on that bike, bike twice?
Yeah.
Because there's other words for that.
Exactly. Bravery, stupidity. You know.
All goes together.
That thing tried to kill. I was like, that thing nearly. He'd open the door in the garage in the morning and they would like snap at him like a dog on a leash. So the bravery is all the same, but it's grip. And all the bikes have roughly the same amount of grip in a high speed, continuous speed corner. Especially because if you throw in spec tires, the tires are no longer part of the equation. Your superbikes. Let's take superbike for example.
Okay, I'm a superbike.
Okay.
Right. Rum, rum. I want to be the R1. I sound great.
Oh, God help me. Can I be Frank? Only if I can be Shirley. All right, let's... Superbikes. World Superbikes. Minimum weight. Okay, they're all built down to just about the minimum weight.
Yeah.
All have roughly the same wheelbase. Okay, roughly the same wheelbase. So those are pretty much the only two variables that make a difference in the terms of the grip and the way the thing handles mid-corner. So if most of the track is the bike leaned over, rider on the knee, going as fast as he dares, but not as fast as the machine will go, then the racing is going to be relatively close. It's genius.
It is genius, and I don't think there's any doubt that the racing at Phillip Island is continuously spectacular.
And Thruxton. Oh, and my God, faster. I love to watch that.
So a couple of factors. One is the vast majority of the tracks are these medium-speed tracks.
Well, they have a lot of stop and go. They have lots of first and second gear corners.
Yes, the vast majority of all the tracks that their big racing is done at are very similar.
Right.
Because there's only so much space, and we're trying not to kill people. Mm. And if you want the spectators close, and on the outside of a turn, if the turn's 40 miles an hour, they can be a lot closer without killing anybody than if the turn's 100 miles an hour.
Yes.
Okay? So just the fact that we're going to a different type of track only a few times a year increases the excitement. Everybody's more pumped. Everybody expects to see better racing. And then, if the racing is good, for any number, they'll go, it's the track! Okay, one. I'm not disagreeing, I'm just pointing this out.
I'm disagreeing.
But here's the other big difference you're not accounting for.
I'm listening.
Big draft.
Oh, I was getting there.
Fast track, big draft. That's the guy who lost a tenth of a second in the corner. You know, boom, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Right? Because the big draft goes back farther, and it's a bigger hole when you can. So you get sucked up. It's like drafting a fat guy.
Drafting a fat guy or drafting a plane.
Exactly. A plane, yes.
Still, hey, I was thinking about that the other day. Wouldn't it be hysterical to hear your captain on your plane going, "We're going to get a bump draft from one of our friends"?
All the NASCAR guys are going, "Yeah,
exactly."
All except for the bumping part.
Right? The rest of us are.
You know what, though? You can do the bumping. Two examples. Korean War. Air war over Mig Alley on the border between North Korea and China.
All right.
Americans are flying F-58 Sabres.
No,
right?
F-86.
86, thank you. And that's the cool-looking plane that, like, you draw, right? That's like, it's not the best plane anymore, but it looks really good.
Wasn't a big fan of
anyway, one of the guys gets hit. They're up high in the air. He's lost his engine now, but his plane still flies.
Right.
So he's heading south and he's coasting.
Right.
Gliding as far as he can.
Okay.
He's not going to make it back to the coast where he's totally safe.
Right.
Right. He's over enemy territory still. The North Koreans are down there and the Chinese. Bad deal for our guys.
Got it.
So his buddy in another F-86 comes up behind and pushes the broken F-86 back. So remember the nose of those planes was a round hole for the air to go in.
Right.
And the top of it had a little lip.
Right.
And so he put the little lip into the exhaust of the other guy's engine and pushed him across the coast until he could safely eject over the water where the helicopter's waiting to rescue
him. It's peg legging.
Example one.
Peg legging.
Same, exactly, like pushing a two-stroke back to the pits after a plug chop with your scooter. Example number two, Vietnam War. Again, you don't want to have to eject over the enemy territory. F-4 Phantom, engine's out, trying to coast back. Now, this plane has a radar dome in the front, so you can't...
And two engines in the, two and the exhausts two engines. In the back.
You can't push like the way they did before. So the pusher had the guy in the disabled plane put his hook down. It's a lands on an aircraft carrier.
Right.
Has a rester hook.
Right.
And the pusher came up behind the plane and put the arrestor hook at the base of his canopy, of his window. There's a little lip there. And he was able to catch the hook and push the guy enough. Destroyed his canopy.
Little pull.
No, he pushed the hook. The hook is hanging down behind the plane.
Oh, it's fixed solidly, though.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
And he pushes it forward. It can only go so far.
Are you sure?
I've read the story.
Oh, then it must be true if it was on the internet.
Well, no, it wasn't on the internet. It was in a book.
Ed, do you know Patton? I think it's Patton Oswalt who says one of the signs of an aging male is that a sudden fascination with old military actions.
Yeah, like, I was all of a fascinated sudden, since high school with this
all
stuff.
All of a sudden, it's like, so anyway, hey, tell me about World War
II. You can push. Anyway, back to our topic.
Drafting.
Yes.
And it's where it's the reason that high-speed tracks work better for drafting is because, rather obviously, the size of the hole that you poke in the air is related to the speed that the motorcycle is going. So the biggest difference in the bikes, the capability of bikes now, is their acceleration out of the corner and their braking going into the corner. The slower the corner, the greater the difference, and coming out of that, the smaller the hole they're poking in the air, so the less opportunity you have to be in the draft.
And when you get the guy who's normally not going to be the winner,
right,
and he gets to any place where things are working for me,
he's got a chance.
And he tries that much harder. Absolutely. Meanwhile, the dude with the points lead is like, dude, if you want to go into turn one,
you
10
go
miles
right
an hour
ahead.
Faster than ever before, I'm going to watch and see what happens because you can't get away from me anyway. Right?
Somebody pointed out that preseason testing at Phillip Island wasn't necessarily an accurate reflection.
But it's good for the ego.
Oh, it's good. But part of it is because that track is so fast. When you crash there, the odds of getting hurt right before the season starts are really high. So the smart guys are like, we're just getting out of here in one piece, you know. We're not doing this shit at all. And as I pointed out on my blog, motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com, he hinted strongly. You know, Alex Lowe's on the Suzuki bike. Nothing wrong with the handling on that bike.
Which is what we always say when a bike is slow, right?
Right. But you take it to a track where it's.
I guarantee, I take a spark plug out of your bike, it'll handle better.
Absolutely, it'll be. I'll be on the gas early in the corner, right? And Phillip Island is a track, as we've just talked about, where a bike without a bunch of acceleration and top speed can still shine. So Alex is on the top of the testing charts all the way through, and I'm like going, he's either going to win, because this is his opportunity. He knows this is one of the tracks where he has a chance to win, right? I said, he's either going to win or the bike's on the ground. And I practice session number 3, I think it was, just destroyed his A bike.
Well, that's the thing about fast tracks, right? Yeah. Like, you go to Big Willow and you're like, oh, listen, if I try really hard in turn 3, I gain a hundredth of a second, right?
Right.
If I try really hard in turn 8, I can get half a second,
right?
John Ulrich is the master of this. That guy never passes anybody 3, 4, 5, 6. Turn 2, turn 8, dude, boom, boom, around the outside of everybody. He's like, yeah, why should I try to go fast in a place where they can't get away? Duh, right? Old guys, they learn
a few things.
The funny thing is, though, everybody crashes in turn 3. Nobody crashes in turn 8 at Big Willow. Why? Because you can crash your bike 12 times in turn 3 before
you
get the damage to one cartwheel off into oblivion. Ooh, I was at Willow one day.
Uh-huh.
We were at Streets racing, mm-hmm. and a car crashed in 8 and went over the fence into the RV area on the outside of turn 8.
Wow.
That was spectacular.
Oh, that is magnificent.
So be careful at racetracks.
Yeah, you have to be careful at racetracks. Thank you for that bit of advice, Ed Sorbo.
Shit, cars can fall out of the sky on your motorhead.
Exactly, great. Right? You're just like, oh, great,
it was
now
really
this.
Fun talking to the guys who were in the trailer where the car came to a rest 6 feet from their trailer.
I was just sitting
there.
Then there was a car.
They rented an RV spot, and they're listening on the radio for the calls, and then they drive over to the Streets from their RV spot, right? It's really smart. And they're in their motorhome eating breakfast or whatever they're doing, and they're like, yeah, we're boom, 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 boom. It shook the motor. You know, they're like, ah! You don't have enough time to run outside.
I was watching some endurance races and
2 minute warning.
No, not yet.
Yeah,
it's only 1914. We still got time.
That's less than one minute.
We got time for this, and we're not calling it a 2 minute warning anymore.
So we're in a special gravity field where time is moving at a different rate than our listeners.
We throw the 2 minute board at the 20 minute mark. Now, which is going
to
be...
So then it's the you're late board.
It's the, exactly.
So and have we established that your theory is correct?
Oh, yeah.
That big fast
Absolutely.
Tracks make for
so
better
if
racing?
You're, if you're okay. listening to this and you are and you're building a racetrack, big sweeping turns, two hairpins max. And the hairpins need to be after a straightaway, which is after a sweeper.
Okay.
So,
and then make sure you leave a slip road.
Yeah, right? Oh, yeah. Make sure you leave a slip road, you know? But you do that, and then it gives the other, you know, if you've got the hairpins on either end of the track, so to speak, you've got half the track, if you're the guy behind, to catch up to the guy in front.
You're
and
making,
then,
you're dividing, designing a tricky track, right?
No,
when you
really.
Have when you have the big differences, it's really hard to make the setup, right? If you've got a tight, slow track, then you can do your tight, slow track setup. If you have a fast track, you can do your fast track
right.
setup. If you do both...
Oh,
you know, it's getting...
That's what the crew chiefs are paid for.
Yes, but people, regular track day people are going to hate your track and they won't go. Go to a track day at Willow Springs.
Right.
Count how many people come to track day at Big Willow.
Right.
How many people come to track day at Streets.
Okay.
Streets,
well,
you learn more, but it's more difficult and more people like Big Willow because it's easy.
Yeah, it's more work.
Well, you're going to build a racetrack, you better make money. So you're going to have to...
Okay, if you're building a racetrack and you don't care about making money.
Oh, okay.
Okay. The endurance race I was watching, multiple classes on the track at the same time. The premier class, much, much faster through the corners, about the same speed down the straightaway as the other classes. They haven't done a good job in making a difference between the top speeds on the cars. So what happens is that the guys in the premier class are making crazy on the brakes dives under the other cars going into the corners.
They don't want to be stuck behind
them
for the whole corner.
That was it. One of the guys, right. It was Estoril, said if you go through, and I'm going to get the corners wrong, but I think it's 5 and 6, they're both right-handers, is if you dive through there, clipping the curbs absolutely hard in your mouth, you'll gain 2 seconds. If you spend one corner stuck behind somebody in a slower class, you'll lose 4 seconds.
Right, because and the speed difference between the unlimited cars mm-hmm. and the street Porsche mm-hmm. is just massive. Right, the street Porsche guy could be a better driver, right? That
right.
just the car doesn't have downforce.
Right.
It has smaller tires.
And right.
There's nothing you can do. You're going.
Right.
You're riding your 250 Ninja to the balls out.
Right.
The dude on the 1000 is going by you on the straightaway, regardless
of what you do.
This first day on the track. Wow! Right. You see me pass that Ninja? Wow! I'm a stud.
When I did the Team Hammer school, I did it on a Katana 750. Okay, and I'd already been to the track a few times, right? And a lot of people out there never been to the And it was Big Willow. A lot of people had never been there before. It was hysterical because first 3 or 4 sessions in the morning, I'm a MotoGP god. Okay, I'm going around everybody. Afternoon, those guys got a lot faster. All of a sudden, it was a lot harder to get around them, you know?
Okay, right, two-minute board.
Two-minute board. Ed, you had a theory the other day. You suggested that, you know, the reason that racing Ninja 250s and the like are going to save club racing in the United States, why?
Because they're simpler.
What does simple mean?
So not just simpler
they're not real
to
smart.
Ride. No, the bikes are pretty dumb. Really,
okay.
All of them. They're easier to ride.
Right.
But they're also easier to purchase.
Yes.
They're easier to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
They're easier to operate at the racetrack.
That's the part I wanted
right?
to talk about.
You don't have to do all that stuff like, gearing. Well, the stock gearing is good, right? The bike can just barely pull top whatever gearing it comes with, and so that's as fast as it's going to go, right?
Nothing else you can do.
Yeah, it's not like you took your super bike to Infineon and you're going to have to
right.
run 4 gears, right?
Right?
Second through fifth is all you can use, right?
So
you know, it's just you're always at the max. That my Hurricane's that way. It's 76 horsepower. I just geared the thing to where that's as tall a gearing as it can pull.
Right.
And it works fine at all the tracks I go to.
Yep.
Okay. You don't have to have tire warmers. I mean, you can use them if you want to, but it's not critical.
Right.
It's easy to do a warm-up lap on a bike like
that. You're not spending a lot of time adjusting the damping settings on
the front
fork.
You know, since there's no adjuster, right?
Right.
You're not beating yourself up on the brakes.
Yes.
The brake pads last for 7 or 8 seasons.
So it's just,
right?
so what we're
just,
talking about, the experience at the track is just calmer, easier.
Well, let's face it. You go to the track for the first time, even if you're racing a bike that has no adjustments and all that, and no warm-up, You still have a million things you got to learn. There's so much stuff going on. You don't even know where the bathrooms are. You don't know what the place smells like. You don't know what first call means. You got to learn all that stuff.
Where the hell the cafe is.
Yeah. When should I eat? How long do I need to digest for? Can I eat? I mean, How do I fall? So if we can take 53 things you got to learn out of the equation, you don't have to do them.
Right.
That's better.
Right.
And so you've got in your life, you know, so much energy. You can run your battery so long.
The dollar worth of attention.
Exactly. And if we don't use it all up the first day, then your longevity of racing is going to be greater, and which is better for all of us.
Right.
The longer you run, the smarter you get, the easier it is for everybody else
around you.
The average intelligence level goes up. You're helping, the species instead of being the Darwinian guy that needs to be ejected.
Right.
So all of those things combine. And then when you crash, the bike weighs less. It doesn't go as far. It doesn't high side you as far. There's less injury. There's less damage. You're more likely to be able to continue. Look at all the ugly 250 ninjas racing.
Right.
Clearly, they don't have to get fixed that much because they didn't break that much.
Hey,
right?
Does this mean the same thing for 600s and liter bikes? When you first go out there, keep it simple?
You're out of your mind. Even if you're a big person,
right?
You shouldn't go out on a 1,000 to start with.
Okay.
I mean, I can see if you weigh 300 pounds, okay, get a 750. Right? But, you know, because of 300
pounds. Please,
because
we want to draft you.
Right? It's just more work and more money. If you spend, here's a simple one.
Okay.
You go to a racetrack and you need only one set of tires for the whole weekend.
Right. You don't have to pull tires
instead
off the damn
thing.
Instead
of three sets of tires.
Right.
So you save two sets of tires worth of money and two sets of tires worth of work.
Time.
Right.
Time.
That you can do something else. Maybe take a nap.
Yeah.
Whatever you need. Right. Because you drove all night to get there and you're tired and you're going to be better riding if you're not tired.
Right.
It's simple. Right.
Absolutely.
So all of those, you start out simple, learn all those lessons early, and then get the bigger bike. It's just like your first street bike. Your first street bike should be what? A, your fantasy bike, or B, a used, already tipped over three times small bike that you can sell
my students, when they ask which bike do I start on, I tell them a dual sport. It's great.
Yeah.
I said, you can crash it eight times and sell it for as much as you bought it for.
Exactly, right? Do you start out going to the most expensive college you can go to? Yes, if you want to get away from your parents and have a party life, great. Otherwise, you stay at home and go to community college for 2 years. Get all the base stuff out of the way, and then go to the expensive college.
Works for me.
Right? Why go to expensive college to take English 101?
And why in the world spend...
Why take English 101?
Why spend $30,000 to find out if you like to race?
Why am I here right now and not out riding my dirt bike in the beautiful damp weather we have right now? I'll tell you why. Because my brother-in-law, Lenny Kirshner, who is listening to this show... did not call at 9 like he said he would so we could make plans. So then when Michael called and said, hey, we got to make podcasts today, I said, come on over.
Speaking of which, we're done with this podcast.
This show is over.
Aloha.
Ah.
What?
Live long and prosper.
Ah, and aloha.